Greetings and welcome to In Star Trek We Trust, the Star Trek podcast. In this fine episode, we will be discussing Turn and Face the Strange Changes, the episode of Discovery from the fifth season, co-written by Mr. David Bowie. My name is Ethan.
Co-written by Mr. David Bowie. You mean the song I thought was sung by the Beatles?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say that this is the first episode this season that I was actually very enthusiastic about, Face the Strange. So I enjoyed it immensely. It is written by Sean Cochran. All right. Sean Cochran does have some Discovery history. He wrote Despite Yourself. He wrote New Eden, an episode we also really liked.
New Eden!
Die Trying, All In, and Face the Strange. He also provided the story for the short trek Calypso, which people are theorizing that this episode may have provided some sort of answer to that. I don't think it did. And not directly. I think maybe there's more implications that it had a... that I think it's more implied, but I don't think it's a direct answer. But there did seem to be a moment when there was a Calypso connection that it was going to finally be answered. But we'll get to that when we discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Sean Cochran has also written... the other series he's worked on is Lipstick Jungle, Mercy, Off the Top, GCB, and Revenge. I've not seen any of those shows. I think the only one I've heard of is Revenge.
None of us.
And Lee Rose has 5 Discovery directorial credits. Choose Your Pain and Obel Percheron, The Examples, Hurricane Destroyed My Town, But to Connect and Face the Strange. Has also directed episodes of Grimm, MacGyver, Rain, Private Eyes, Riverdale, Valor, and Dynasty. So MacGyver and Dynasty.
Well,
the new one.
Interestingly, before that, a lot of drama series I noticed.
Yes.
Interesting.
Have you noticed, though, we're not getting a lot of Vampire Diaries, though?
Right, finally.
Yeah.
Right, no ABC, trashy ABC shows.
Right, we just get actors from it.
Yes.
On Strange New World. We get, what's his face, who plays Kirk?
Look.
He was on Vampire Diaries.
Yes, he was. I think he was prominently featured, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I never saw any of it. Well, the Vampire Diaries expanded universe. I've never seen any of it.
So here's what I want you to do. I want you to tell our listeners how you described the episode to me, what you thought of it.
I was cute. It was cute.
It was cute. Let me give you context. You said when we went to go see Wonka, we came out of that movie and you said to me, that's like what if I was like 10, my parents would say, I like that movie. It was cute. It was cute.
Yeah, I thought this one was cute. Although,
what does that mean?
It just means it's nice, you know?
It's nice.
Which is not really the deep analysis that you come to us for, listeners. But I do have more deep analysis because then I watched it and took notes. So,
yes.
But analysis for numbing.
At a high level, though, I mean, I think you did agree with me that it was the best of the season. The sense I got was you didn't love it as much as I did, but you did like it.
I liked it.
Good.
On first viewing.
Oh, boy. Okay. I still liked it on second viewing.
I didn't dislike it on second viewing.
Right.
But I was disappointed on second viewing.
There were some things that you didn't like that I actually did agree with you on, and we will get to those so I can...
Yes.
And if those things still ring true, but I'll be curious if this is those of them anyway. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was cute, and it was on second viewing. I think I just saw a lot of missed opportunities. That's all it is.
You think maybe one more draft, it could have been a bit of a tighter story.
Well, I just think I can get into it right now.
Go ahead.
So we have the conflict immediately between Michael and Rainer, number one.
Yes,
and he thinks that she's too, you know, cutesy with their crew.
Yep.
Lets them have ideas and whatnot. And he says, you haven't been through, you didn't have to learn the lessons that me and my crew did, implying that when there was no Federation,
things were really hard. He's seen some crap that Michael's never had to see.
Right.
Okay. So that set something up, which never really paid off, but it should have. I wish he had learned after going back and seeing everything that Discovery had been through, was like, oh, you have seen as much crap as me.
Maybe like he. Yeah.
Yes. And I think it could have been a clip show. He could have even made it a clip show.
Right.
In the old television tradition of
what
a clip show.
They typically did when there was a writer's strike. I may push back on you a little bit, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that we go back to all these very significant points in Discovery. We go back to Disco coming to the future with the Red Angel.
Yep.
We go to Discovery and Dry Dock getting built.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the battle with Control. Osira attacking Discovery. Mm. Future Zora, where everyone's dead. But for some reason, there's very little interaction with what's happening in those moments they go back to.
Right.
They just kind of are like, oh, we're the Red Angel. Okay, cool. Oh, it's a battle with Control. Okay, let's just do this thing.
Yeah.
I think those were kind of missed opportunities.
Is it? Can I ask a quick question? Let me ask you, did it seem like, sure, they went back to these moments, but it didn't seem like, they didn't seem like significant moments.
They were, it didn't affect the story at all.
Yeah,
it could have been
I see what you mean, yeah.
And I think, though, those are all times when Rayner could have learned the lesson of, like, well, you have seen as much as I have. Because you saw the ship getting destroyed, you saw it being attacked by Osira, you saw it being attacked by Fighting Control.
Right.
You saw all this crazy stuff going down.
Right.
So that's what that comes. So essentially what Locke learns is that he should be more helpful in knowing the crew is good.
Yeah.
And it seems like it was a long way for that to be his takeaway. He should be more helpful in that he should get to know his crew. But I felt that was a little bit disappointing. I felt that there could have been more to all of that. A couple of nitpicks, if I'm just going here, from cooking. Let me cook. I cannot believe that they go to the future with Zora. Everyone's dead. And I swear to you, in this writer's room, I don't want to rant.
It's a remedial student situation.
When Zora said the progenitor tech fell into the wrong hands... Again, this phrase fell into the wrong hands. Whose hands? Why can't you just tell us whose hands? So, fell into the wrong hands, and then, oh, this must be Monolock's highest bidders. I think they didn't come up with anyone. They didn't come up with anyone, so they're never going to say it. They're going to say the wrong hands and the highest bidders. That's all they're ever going to say. We're never going to know who it's going to go to. So the threat doesn't feel real. The threat is this. Amorphous thing.
That's a thing.
Someone evil might get the thing.
Are we to infer that Maul and Locke will get a hold of the technology, or that they're just going to try to sell it to somebody or work with somebody? I mean, there seemed to be a suggestion in the beginning that they want it in the beginning of this episode, but I think I think the only issue there is that I don't have a sense of what they are truly capable
of, it's always
right, like they don't
highest bidders. Is it just falling into the wrong hands, which I find falling into the wrong hands to be a terrible cliche, and the fact that it's been said at least 5 times in this
or
you're writers, you could come up with a different way to say falling into the wrong hands.
Right. It's like
it's funny because it's, you can tell it's the writers because all these different characters are saying it. Even Zora is saying it thousands of years in the future. Zora is saying the exact same phrase, fall into the wrong hands.
I remember taking a writing class in high school, and one of the sheets that my teacher gave us is a piece of paper, and what it was a sheet full of like all the different ways you can say the word said.
Oh yes,
yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah,
that is huge. Yeah.
So it's like,
and a list of just don't use a cliche.
Right.
If you can say it in a new way, say it in a new way. Don't say fall into the wrong hand. Just say like the tech was acquired by blank.
It could.
And why can't it tell us who it is?
It makes me wonder, like, is it Maul and Locke, or like, did they get it and then somebody, and then like some greater power came and took it from them?
I think it's their highest bidders, because they keep saying the highest bidders.
Hmm.
And even the fact that Zora's memory was erased, I felt like, oh, this is just, they didn't want to have to figure out who the highest bidders are or what is actually going to happen, so they just made the memory erase and they don't have to deal with it.
But I think, I just want to ask you one more thing on that. So, I think it's a fair nitpick, but it really, at the end of the day, it's really just about, like, language. I mean, you still understood what they meant.
Yes,
the wording they chose.
I don't like the wording. I also don't like the fact that that big piece of information is missing. For seemingly no reason other than they didn't bother to figure it out.
Right.
Because we want to understand the threat and we just keep getting vagaries. Highest bidder, wrong hands.
I'm not a drip feed kind of person, but we're not really even getting much of a drip.
Yes, and all we know right now is that you can create life with it, and it has something to do with DNA. So I still don't understand how you're going to destroy a space station with DNA.
Well, the clues that we've gotten so far is Stamets even said in this episode, like, it's a technology beyond anything we've ever seen. Like, he implied, I forget what his exact wording was. It's probably in similar vein to falling into the wrong hands. But you get the sense that it's just so far beyond anything that they know.
And
it could be like falling into the wrong hands. Like, maybe it's not even like something nefarious. It's just something like somebody got it and they didn't even know what to do with it. And then, you know, all hell broke loose or something. So maybe.
I need some kind of explanation as to how something that is used to manipulate DNA could.
I think that's part of it. That's not all of it.
That's right. But I wonder, what is it then?
Right.
And the feeling that I have, because of, you know, fool me once, is that they haven't figured out what it is. They just know if they keep saying we don't want it to fall into the wrong hands and that's dangerous tech, that's all we need to know. It's beyond anything we've ever seen. That's all that they need to tell us.
They
need to tell us more.
This is what I said. This is sort of in keeping in what I said to you about the episode when I first watched it. I said to you, as a standalone episode, it's a lot of fun. I think it's really great. I really love it. Where it's how it sort of advances the overall story, the overall narrative of the season, it doesn't really do much there, and that's frustrating. But as an episode by itself,
interestingly, we get the best use of Arium in the entire series.
Totally.
She's been dead for several seasons.
Like if this was just an episode if you imagine Discovery as being self-contained episodes, and this was just one episode where they encounter some weird thing, and this is happening, I think this would have been one of the best. I mean, I still think I'm going to say it's one of the best episodes of the series. But yeah, I think we would have enjoyed it a hell of a lot more. But yeah, you have to sort of look at it in two ways, by itself, and then how does it contribute to the overall struggle? Yeah.
And also, it's not that I didn't like it. It's just that after viewing it the second time, I just thought there was so much more potential there.
Right.
For instance, when they go to Earth, they're on Earth when the Discovery is being built, which I thought was a very cool idea.
Yeah.
But neither of them react in any way to being on Earth. When the last time they were on Earth, everybody was freaking out. Oh my God, it's Earth. Oh my God, a tree. Oh my God.
Well, yet
while they're on Earth, they don't have a single comment about being on Earth. Wow, look, it's Earth. Look, it's the... This is all not Starfleet and nothing, single comment.
When that scene came up, I'm saying to myself, where are they exactly? Because obviously the Golden Gate Bridge, they're in San Francisco. But I'm like, they're near Starfleet Academy. Like, they're near the Academy grounds, the Starfleet headquarters. And so I couldn't reconcile. I'm like, where is the ship being built exactly?
Yeah. And don't they build them in space?
Even in the Kelvin films, like there's a point where like you see the Enterprise being built on the ground, but then they eventually move it up. So I think there's like a point where like they started on the ground and then they, I think it just depends.
That's fair.
But I think that was sort of like it's not wrong. It's not even something I'm gonna lose my mind.
Oh yeah,
or anything like that. But yeah, I mean,
it's often inconsistent where things are.
It is.
In comparison to the Golden Gate Bridge.
And it's been like that all the time. It's not Discovery. Discovery's, if anything, is keeping up that tradition of that being inconsistent. Yeah.
Yes.
But I think, what you're saying, though, about Rayner, though, I think my only sort of pushback on that, and I think you make really valid points.
Thank you.
But I did feel like by the end of it, because I liked how it started off with him sort of being an asshole to Reese. And then by the end of it, he came around and said and was nice. So I felt like there was a little bit of a, there was a really good arc there, but I will agree with you. They could have done more with it. There was more, they could have made it a little bit stronger. They could have, yeah, there was more they could have done.
Yeah. But I still feel what he did learn is that you have to know your crew better, and it's okay to be more, to know them and to get, and to be close to them, right, and whatnot, which I think is also great because this has been a criticism that many have had, including us, of Discoveries. They're all too chatty and emotional and, right, and all this.
Right. Right.
So at least they gave us a reason for it.
Right.
Now.
Yeah.
In retrospect, which is fun. That's good.
Right. I mean, there was a little bit of, it's sort of when Burnham pulls Rayner aside into the ready room and wants to talk to him about the way he's treating the crew and how she says, I welcome, basically like, I welcome suggestion. I encourage my crew to, you know, speak freely. It did remind me of Captain Pike's Enterprise because he sort of treats his crew the same way. So I thought there was a nice connection there. I liked that. And having her put it that way, I thought worked, mm-hmm, because as you and I have said, it often feels like there is no command structure on the show and everyone's just free to do whatever the hell they want. But it's Michael basically saying, oh, you know, I encourage them to just speak their minds. I don't like that they at times seem to ignore the command structure entirely. So I was glad to see Michael sort of almost pull rank on him and say, you know, look, it, I'm the captain. We do this by the way, you know.
And I did like also just that someone from the outside would notice that and say, this is not right.
Right.
Because, you know, like we always say, if Picard was there, he would freak out.
Well, as you and I said, you know, even though Rayner is from this time, he often, he feels like he would be at home during Next Generation's time. Or as I think, as we've said, maybe all of Starfleet is like him and Discovery is the only one that's not.
Yes, and they get a lot of passes because they, yeah,
and it's special. And it's refreshing because while it may seem like he's an asshole because we're just used to the way Discovery is, it's like, no, actually, he's what Starfleet is supposed to be. He's, right? That's what, he's actually right, and they're not doing it correctly.
Yes, and, you know, okay, so Michael has a different way of doing things and they had to get him on board, and now he's on board. To some degree. And she even admitted to him, like, you're right, though, it can be disruptive if they have too much familiarity.
Well, and didn't you say last week that you said you're afraid they're going to, like, Discovery eyes him?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, which, you know, they didn't go that far. It's not like he told them that it's his past trauma and started crying or anything.
No, but we have 6 episodes left. I'm sure by the end of it.
I did find it very funny that Paul Stamets said, I'm so happy to see you, I could cry. I wonder if that was a little joke on itself, you know, a little joke in its own direction.
Yeah. Well, so the thing I was going to bring up is, so like in the first episode, we get, in the beginning of this episode, 15 hours ago. And we see,
but for no particular reason, right?
Well,
I couldn't see it.
It was... I'd say yes and no. I mean, maybe yes and no. I think that because we see how Maul and Locke got the time bug. They're not good with these things. We have time crystals and time bugs. And they get it from this other alien. They kill him. They take it. They take his tech. Krenim tech. The Krenim, by the way, are from the Voyager episode Year of Hell.
Mm-hmm. And they also said it was leftover tech from the Temporal Wars. Yes. Which is cool.
Which, let me get to that in 1 second. So... I'm going to hold off because I don't know if we're supposed to, if there's more there to tell. Like, is it just about how they got it? Or am I supposed to look at who this person is and, you know, are they leaving something there for me to figure out? I don't know.
I would.
But they got the time bug and now we know why.
Right. But here's one question I do have on it.
But why did they do it? Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's one. They did it. I guess it was just to, now that they think they know where they're going, it's just to, so the Discovery would have to waste a bunch of time jumping through time and couldn't stop them.
But when they were done, they were 6 hours ahead.
Yeah, but I think they had wasted those whole 6 hours doing all that crap.
Yeah.
So it was like, now they're actually 6 hours ahead in time, but they're 6 hours behind Maul and Locke. Because they've been farting around
in
time.
Well, Well, that's my question, right? As they were jumping around through time, is that affecting the passage of time for those who are not there? Do you know what I mean? Like, are they actually moving through time, or...
I think so, yes. We know that because...
Yeah.
We know that because... what's their name said? Why did I blink and it's 6 hours later?
Yes, Adira said that at the end. Yeah.
Yes, Adira.
Well, here's my question. So when I watched it the second time and I took notes, the recap came up and I hit skip recap.
Yes.
And the first thing I saw, it said 15 hours earlier.
Yes. That's
how the episode starts.
That's how the episode begins. Yes.
Okay. So then 15 hours earlier than what?
From where Discovery is at that point. So basically,
how do we know? Because they didn't give us a scene to establish what present time was.
Well, no,
before
because
it told us it earlier.
At the end of the last episode, you see Locke. I always get them mixed up. The blonde Mahler Locke. I think it's Locke. She puts the time bug on Adira before Adira goes up back up to Discovery, back on Trill.
Okay, so the present that they're 15 hours before. It's from the previous episode.
Correct. They even say Discovery is, I think they say something like Discovery is still at Trill or on its way to Trill or something like that. So it's earlier in, that's happening simultaneously during the last week's episode when they're going to Trill.
It's a little weird to not give us a scene of what's happening and then say 15 hours before this scene.
Right.
You know?
Well, it doesn't really answer a question. Because they get this time bug, okay, great. But you just,
we don't know anything about the time bug yet.
Right.
So it didn't really help us. Yeah, it didn't add anything. Like, it could have just been like, this is happening now, and then this is happening after.
Yeah, we see where they get it. Now, unless they're going to be building on that a little bit more, I don't know. But...
Yeah, they're really into using this, previously, jumping back in time, but they haven't used it effectively yet.
I know, it's very strange, yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, I think you have to wonder, like, they're going to get this time bug, and if they didn't do that 15 hours earlier thing, you'd think to yourself, like, I think you'd be asking the question, where do they get this tech from? Why do they even have that?
Well, they could have had that scene. They didn't have to say 15 hours earlier. All they had to do was start the episode with that scene, and then the next scene is it on the Discovery. We're like, okay, they got it, now it's on Discovery.
Right.
Yeah,
but she was on Trill, so they had. Yeah, it was. I get what you're saying. We're talking in circles.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. We are talking in a time loop.
Ow! Sorry, hit my knee.
Oh,
listeners, there's one other oddity. So as long as I'm nitpicking, there's
all
a point
you've
when
been doing.
Rainier says to Paul, and it seems like this line is supposed to have a bunch of weight to it. Let's show him old dogs still know the best tricks. And Paul smiles and is like, yeah. And I was just thinking, like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was never a question that old dogs didn't know good tricks or something.
I will say, though, I came away from this episode feeling like it was a lot of fun. I love a good time travel episode, and I love time loop episodes. So this is sort of in that great tradition, great style of Trek. What I really love is how it also kind of mirrors a little bit of Back to the Future Part 2. When they go back to 1955, the second time when they're seeing the first movie from that different, from, another perspective. And I wondered at one point, is Mike, like, so, because they do a really good job of, like, at first of avoiding interaction, right? And then the longer they're there, they realize, like, they're going to have to start doing that. And... Of course, I start asking the questions. Well, obviously, somebody's going to realize their uniform is not the same.
Yeah.
How are we going to get by around this? But they don't even. I think it would have been fun if they had made some sort of effort to conceal themselves. Granted, we wouldn't have had a lot of time to do that.
Well, they do have those replicators that print uniforms, so
right.
It would have been easy.
Right. So, or like if it had been like the original series or like Next Gen, they would have like some crew member would have been walking by. They would have knocked them out. And then just taken their clothes or whatever. But I said
it was a little oddly fit. Fitting. It was funny. I did like when Tilly complimented her hair.
Yeah,
your hair's different. I really like it. That was kind of fun. And I said, why are you out of uniform? Because I didn't even recognize what she was wearing as any kind of uniform. They thought it was just regular clothes.
But what they also do that I think is a lot of fun is that I thought was actually really well executed. So Stamets, obviously, Stamets is sort of moving with them, but in a different way because of like the mycelial network or something like that. I forget the reason they say he is experiencing
it. DNA.
Right. That's right. He's experiencing it. But if you notice his uniform is changing like everybody else's because he's still technically in every timeline, but he's aware of like the changes. Right. They did one thing that I thought worked really well. I love when they finally meet up with him and they're trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do? And they realize that the clock is ticking. We don't have a lot of time left. We're running out of time. I like when they say, all right, just meet up on deck 13 every single time. Like, I love how they establish a place to meet every single time they shift timeline. So they don't have to sort of go through this whole finding each other all over again. I thought that was a really good way to sort of like, you know, make sure they're staying in sync every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree. Another bit of Paul that I really liked is when they were in the past, there were points where I think he was trying to act like the asshole he used to be.
Yes.
So that people wouldn't think it was odd.
Yes.
That was funny, because if you remember, the first season, he was a real dick.
He was, especially in the third episode when we first meet him. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
He was acting like a dick again.
And I also liked... I thought to myself, how long is it going to be until Michael actually encounters herself? And then, of course, she does. Again, it made me think of Back to the Future Part 2. It's like when the two Docs met each other, right?
It made me think of the original series with two Kirks fighting. Right.
But I loved the fight scene they had because they decided to throw it back to the original series. It like reminded me of just that fight scene that they had in the corridor. It was like sort of the same thing. And what I noticed was their fighting styles were like the same, but also different at times. Like it's almost like Michael of the past had a bit of a rougher, you know, fighting style than the other Michael of present did, and that's why
they're very kung fu based.
It's the Vulcan martial arts.
Yeah, I wish one of them had done a two handed over the head.
That's Kurt's signature move, dude. Yeah, but
that would be nice.
There were those things that I liked. It was really that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed those things. I thought this was a really, really good riff on a sort of a familiar type of time travel story. Sort of reminded me of, there's a Voyager episode called in the seventh season called Shattered, which is also a sort of time travel episode. And Voyager itself is basically shattered into several different time periods. So as Chakotay makes his way through the ship, he's stepping into different time periods of the ship over the years from the past. At one point, he goes into the future. So it sort of reminded me of that, too. So I thought this was a really nice take and a really interesting and original take on time travel for Trek. I liked this. I liked it a lot. But again,
something else I found fun. The crew had a nice conversation after it was all over when clearly Michael had been telling them about the adventures they just had.
Right.
And they sort of were joking around with each other and they had a nice laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the first times I've seen the crew in one of those later moments.
Right.
And it was all of them and it was very nice.
Right. Yes. One of the things, I'm going to save the Calypso thing sort of for the end, but one of the things I wanted to mention, because I know you didn't really like this either. This is the only thing I really didn't like about it.
Oh, yes.
It was, so as we've established, you know, there is a point where they're in these, this is actually another thing I liked about it. The more jumps they make, the more time they're spending. The time in each time period is extending. So they reach a point where they say, well, we're going to have to end up interacting with somebody, or, you know, we can only like do what we're doing like this under the radar for so long. We're going to have to start interacting with the crew at some point. So they realize, I think they're in they would place it somewhere in the first season. Michael's still a specialist. It's when Michael fights the other Michael. They realize that they have to go to the bridge because they have to get Discovery to break the warp bubble in order to break this time loop. So Michael has to go up there to the bridge. Lorca, this is during the Lorca time period, and Lorca's not even on the ship.
They couldn't afford that actor, I'm sure.
Right. I thought we would maybe hear him on voiceover, but they don't. It's not. But the thing is, that's not placed in an actual episode.
Really liked having Arium be there.
Right. What I didn't like, though, is in a typical scene like this in Trek, you may reach a point where like you have to explain to somebody of a past time period who you are and make a compelling case as to where you came from and why you need their help and everything like that. So we've seen this kind of thing before. I don't like what they actually... I don't like the what Michael said to convince them of this, right? And I will preface it by saying, even though she's doing it, they're not actually, like, polluting the timeline. Like, whatever they do, they establish, like, whatever we do here, it's not going to affect anything, because as soon as we do, everyone's going to forget about all of this. Mm-hmm. Which I guess was reason enough for them to do what they did, which is, Michael, do you want to finish my thoughts? I know you don't like it. You know you didn't like it. It's what she tells Arium.
Oh.
She convinces, when she tells, okay, she tells Arium.
Oh, she's going to die?
You're going to die, yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't it be better if you told someone their past and their future? She can right. make up any old thing.
Right.
But then she says, yeah, you sacrifice yourselves.
Right.
And everybody says, oh, no, you wouldn't do that. And then she says, actually, no, I definitely would do that. So that was, it was okay, I guess.
It was okay, but I just felt like there's... It felt to me like there was meant to be some emotional weight there that wasn't really landing for me. Because how does that... You telling me that I'm going to die, how does that make me believe your story, other than just...
I guess it's just that only some... Maybe only you would know how you would react in a situation where you had to give up your life to save everyone.
Yeah.
But also, I would assume most people in Starfleet would make that same decision, right. So it wasn't that unique.
It didn't feel...
I think if you said no, that would be more odd.
It didn't feel specific to Arium. And I think in that same moment, what also kind of frustrated me, it did more in the beginning, but the second time, not as much. Because simultaneously, Rayner and Stamets are down in engineering waiting for this to happen as they break the warp bubble so they can stop this time bug, but they're being held at phaser point by Specialist Burnham and Reese.
Yes.
And so when they have convinced, Arium of this, and Arium's the bridge crew is going to help them, Arium should now say, Specialist Burnham, Lieutenant Reese, stand down. Let them proceed.
Uh-huh. Doesn't make an effort. Doesn't even try.
Nothing. They have to have this weird... And I get it, like, as far as, like, it...
I get it. You want to have that scene.
It ties back to the beginning of the episode, but I just felt like that wasn't the right place for it. Because it was
also
just adding needless delay.
And then... But it's funny, because they also explained why Michael couldn't go and do it.
Right.
I can't get there in time. So how hard would it have been just to have Arium say... Exactly what you said. Stand down. And then I'm saying, no, I know this. What could have been Michael doing the same thing she did in the pilot episode, right, when she didn't listen to orders? No, I know this. You know, it would have just been a couple of lines that would have made... Because the whole time I was thinking, why is Arium not... Like, I was distracted, right, because I was wondering why Arium didn't tell her to stand down.
I was also wondering, so I don't know where in the first season that is supposed to take place, right? I don't know if it's supposed to take place sort of like right after the third episode, which was The Butcher's Knife, Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry. But I thought to myself, how was Michael able to convince Reese so quickly? Because that's a time where the crew didn't really know, like, or trust her. So what did she do to get him to come with him and get a phaser and say, you have to help me stop these? Like, wouldn't he be like, what? What are you talking about?
Well, they probably would be scared of even giving her a phaser.
Right.
They were very distrustful.
And why would the Michael of that time even give a shit? Because she was not... She was still, I'm assuming this takes place either right before or right after. It would have to be right after Magic to make the same, I'm sorry, it's not Butcher's Knife. Context is for King's, the name of the episode. Why would, at that time, why would Michael give a shit? I think Michael was still very much like, I just want to get off the ship, all that other stuff. Why would she care all that much? You know?
Well, I think if she thought someone was going to destroy, maybe she thought they were just trying to destroy the ship. And for her own self-preservation, she didn't want to die.
Maybe, yeah.
That could be it, I guess.
But no, I get what they were doing. That scene...
Yeah, they wanted to give a moment where Rayner would put into practice...
Yes.
...what he had learned.
Yes.
So they set it up so that he's the one who had to do it.
Right.
And he did it.
He did it. So I get
it. Yes, it was good. It was a good scene, I have to say. Yeah, like, you're going to listen to that voice because it's going to take you far. You're going to do great things. It was nice.
But I thought to myself, even if Arium told them, stand down, and they do, Rayner still could have said that to Michael.
That's true. Oh, that's a good point.
Right? He used it to get her to take the phaser, to point the phaser down.
Yeah.
And like, so if Arium had said, you know, Specialist Burnham, Lieutenant Reese, stand down, let them proceed, and they do, Rayner could then say, you know, Burnham, I happen to know that, and then go into the whole thing. Like, he still could have said it. I just don't think he should have. The fate of this shouldn't have been held on whether or not he's able to convince her or not. That's, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're going for the high stakes.
Right. But I will say, now, there was that, and then there was a moment before that where Stamets had, like, an emotional moment with Rayna. And while I would probably typically roll my eyes, I didn't find myself doing it this time in this episode, because I just felt like they made sense within the context of the event, so I didn't find
exactly,
it. It didn't, yeah.
That's about him learning about the crew. So by listening to his stress, instead of just telling him, you know,
right,
shut up, you have a job to do.
Right.
It shows him growing. So yeah. I agree. That worked well.
Yeah. So I think you make valid nitpicks, but I don't know that they... I question how much they affect the episode. I mean, if we rated this 4 stars, would your nitpicks get it down to like a 3 or something like that? I mean,
I think some of them are not nitpicks. I think.
Yeah,
some of them are nitpicks. Some of them are not. Because honestly, I was thinking each time, oh, there's the Red Angel. Like, Rayner didn't even. She said, "Oh, the Red Angel. That's me." Rayner didn't even have a comment on that. You're out in space. You're Red Angel, and you're like destroying the ship. You figured he would have had a follow-up question. He didn't.
Right.
So it all seemed like very much backdrop. None of it affected things. So each time I was thinking like, oh, what's going to happen with the Red Angel? Okay, nothing.
Right.
Oh, what's going to happen to their dry dock on Earth? Nothing.
Right.
Oh, the battle with Control. How's that going to fit in? Doesn't.
I will say I was a little disappointed at one thing. I kind of wish that they treated this like what they were doing. I didn't want the characters to forget. Because I thought to myself, if they could leave it that way, and maybe in some way their actions, even though if you go back to the episodes that they actually go into, even though that stuff may happen off screen, did they somehow affect, like, did Rayner's speech to Michael, would Rayner's speech to Michael in that moment set her on the path to become?
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, what do they call it? Predestination. I think they call that a predestination paradox. Could they somehow have set it up that way to where their actions in going back into these episodes, into those existing episodes, set them on the path to where they wind up? So they make it
like,
they make it a loop. Exactly. Sort of like the way Boimler affected Spock and Chapel.
Yeah, but instead they decided to go a little too cute. The other kind of cute where it's like a little too clever.
Right.
Like when Noonien and Sung has the little kissy time with Kirk.
Right.
You know, a little too cute because nobody remembers anything.
I mean, and the thing is, it could have, and I can understand why they didn't do it, because maybe they just thought to ourselves, you know what, it's just going to give us a bit of a headache if we try to do that, because maybe we don't want to like try to squeeze it in to make it fit. So maybe not. But
yeah, they have gotten a lot of criticism for those kind of things.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's more of a nice to have.
Yes, yes.
One of the points I want to bring up, though, is there are theories out there, because one of the timelines they go into is, as we were talking about earlier, the future, and they see the results of the weapon falling into the wrong hands. And there's a point where it seems like it then lines up with Calypso, because Discovery's abandoned, there's dust everywhere, and it's like,
oh, we hear the movie in the background?
Hear the movie in the background. Yes, it's actually, that's the big point. And even though they have said they had every intention of, you know, resolving that, I don't know that this was it. I think the cancellation of the show may have potentially put the kibosh on that. But also, don't forget, in Calypso, they wrote Calypso, it was in between the first season and the second season, before they even knew about the jump to the future. So Calypso takes place... Discovery still in Calypso, Discovery still has its 23rd century appearance, right?
Oh, okay.
So, and I've heard theories of like, oh, maybe, you know, they've got the programmable matter, maybe the ship revert. One theory that I do kind of agree with, though, is when they arrive in this episode and Zora says, you know, Captain, is that you? Or I think she says something like, or am I dreaming?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that Calypso is just a dream of Zora's? I mean, even if that's it, whatever. I'm not demanding an answer for that. But that is potentially a possibility. So maybe. I mean, I'm not expecting an answer to Calypso. If they just decide, yep, Calypso's a dream, that's fine.
I don't think I think if that's the case, they'll never tell us.
Sure.
And I don't think that... I would doubt if they would have thought of that.
Yeah. But it's fun to theorize,
too. I mean, this is like what you always say. It's like, yeah, here's the reason. Because they made it before and it wasn't like that. You know?
Sure, yeah.
It's like, that probably likely is the real reason.
I've said, it definitely is. But yeah. It's the whole, like, fans want a sort of in-universe explanation for things. And, you know, it goes back to the whole, like, when Enterprise was announced. And it's a prequel. It's like... Well, how come we didn't know about this before? Why didn't they answer this? Because it's being produced now, and you know, they didn't know about it back when they.
Yeah, why doesn't it look like the old show? Like, because it's not 1960s.
Right, exactly. So it's just, and what you've identified there is like that's where the line is for me. Like, I can separate up. I don't need an answer for that. Like, I didn't need an answer as to why the Klingon suddenly had forehead ridges and that. The franchise didn't have to explain that to me. It's because.
But they did it in such a fun way.
It's fun, but it doesn't add anything to it. And it's DS9's fault for that because they imply that something actually happened. And then that's why I was like, well, what did happen? Right. But I wasn't really asking the question before that because I knew the real world explanation was, well, they got a better makeup budget and they were able to do it. So. Fine.
Yeah, they didn't think of it first time.
I'm sure if they could have done it originally, they would have. So it's this sort of falls in line with that same type of
mindset. Yeah, and for me, this falls into the fool me once thing.
Mm.
Because I don't think that they're working with this kind of grand scheme.
No.
And they haven't given us any indication that that's how they run this show. It's really like, throw everything out if it seems like we want to try something else. Nothing matters.
Right. Yeah.
So that's how I think of it.
Calypso, again, it was between the first and second season. It was so long before they had even decided we're going to throw Discovery into the 32nd century. So they weren't planning that far ahead.
If they want to, now they can just say, well, that was an alternate possible future.
Right.
That works too.
Right.
And someone will say, well, the ship looked different. Just don't worry about it.
That's when people criticize, like, oh, they weren't thinking too far ahead. So, well, sometimes they don't think too far ahead. And it's not a reflection on, like, a work ethic. It's just, you're just trying to, you know, you're just not thinking that far ahead. It's like one of those things, like, if we're going to answer it, maybe we'll just do it eventually. But
if you're still surprised that they're not planning multiple seasons ahead on the show, then that would be weird.
Right.
You should know that by now.
Fans want Trek's continuity to be completely smooth, but it's not. It's
not. Never really has been.
But I will say, for a franchise that old, it is remarkably consistent, let's be honest. But it's not perfect.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not perfect.
Yeah.
There was just too much stuff done in the 60s when they weren't really thinking about it as something that was going to live on and have to line up.
Yeah. The original series contradicts itself several times, but anyway.
And even the fact that they had as much lore as they did was because they filmed a different pilot that they didn't want to waste. That was sort of an accident that they had as much, like...
Yes.
Built-in lore.
Had it not been for that, we would not have Strange New Worlds.
Right, and we wouldn't have idea of like, oh, the Enterprise has existed before, and Kirk's been around before, and it was a different crew, and all those ideas.
If you really think about it, so the menagerie, it's the reason why that's done, it's to save money. So a cost-cutting maneuver gave us this show.
Yes, and it's great because this is a thing where... It is the limitations put on you, the like restrictions that make you more creative. Mm-hmm. So they must have said to him, look, we have this pilot. How can we use it in a new episode? That was the assignment.
Right.
And that's why we got Pike in a box with the light. What a fascinating and interesting thing that they did because of the limitations.
Right.
Reminds me, if you have a totally open canvas, you have too many options. It's too hard to focus in. You need some limits.
You know what I think? I'm going to tell you what I'm going to just make up something on the spot. You know what I think Calypso is? It's a hollow novel written by Brad Riddboimler. That's what it is. If that's what they decided it is, I'd be like, that's fine.
When he was depressed.
That's right. That's fine.
I like that.
Lower Decks can be like the receptacle for those things. It's like, oh, yeah, that's because all the unexplainable stuff. Oh, it's just Mariner and Boimler writing shit. It's fine.
You knew that it was Riker and Troy on the holiday.
Yep. Yep. Do you have anything else?
Let me check. Oh, yes.
Okay.
I do. So, interestingly, at the beginning, we get a little bit on Maul or Locke or one of them.
Both of them.
Because she says, we lined the latinum with poison, like the kind you sold to the Emerald Chain to use on people like me.
Yeah.
That was an interesting bit of backstory. Mm-hmm. So she's been oppressed by the Emerald Chain at some point.
Yep.
So there's that. That's all.
The less I hear about the Emerald Chain, the better, 'cause I just think of that terrible villain. Sorry.
Yeah, she was mentioned by name in this episode.
I know. And I was like, please don't show her to us. I don't want to see her again.
Yeah. So hopefully we are going to get this backstory episode on Maul and Locke or flashback or something.
You know, that's it. When they did that for What's-His-Face last season, I wasn't into it. But if they give us something here, I want to know.
Yeah, I want to know too.
Yeah.
You've set them up to be actually kind of interesting. There's a couple on the run. They're an interspecies relationship. You know, there's all kinds of interesting stuff going on. The green guy clearly is a Skrull that came from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. But the thing is, they don't feel to me, I mean, they're villains, but they don't feel like traditional villains, like in the sense of like, we're going to, you know, kill you. We're going to just, they don't feel like threatening to me. And that isn't to say anything about the writing.
They're desperate. They're trying to.
Yeah.
They're trying to just survive.
Yeah. I mean, the jury's still out on them, but I don't feel sort of like the way like they established a villain in the past, like, you know, here's Khan, here's Krug, here's, it doesn't feel that way. I feel like it's going to be a sort of evolving kind of a thing.
Yes, you can have some sympathy for them.
Yeah, which is the best.
They're
kind
in a
of
tough
villain.
Situation.
Right. Huh? Which is kind of a really good type of villain, right? I mean, a villain is somebody you sort of, it's like, because a villain doesn't think, an evil person doesn't think they're evil. They do things that are evil, but.
Except Osira.
Except Osira, yeah. But, you know, as somebody who teaches writing, I know I say this to you a lot. I mean, that's something that, it's like you make a villain, give him a purpose, and maybe as the audience, you relate to them on some level.
Yeah, you give them
sort of understand.
There needs to be a reason why they're doing the things they're doing. And they did good at giving them a reason. They have a bounty on their head.
Yeah.
They are desperate. They don't have much money. This is just what they do. They find, scavenge stuff or steal stuff and sell it. And they just happen to fall into this big score that could be worth a real lot of money and could solve all their problems.
Right. And you know something? I mean, that's
weird. They're in love. They just want to stay together. That's it.
And you know something? Like, that's, it's weird to say for this show. I'm sorry, but like, that's interesting to me.
Yeah.
No, I find that interesting. Yeah, we haven't spent enough time with them yet for me to really get a sense of like what I think of them. But what you described, if that's the case, then that's interesting. Tell me more.
Yeah, yes.
If you want to see the whole episode, then go ahead.
I guess in credit to the show, they've also done that in very few scenes.
Right.
Which is a skill when you can paint a character with only a few scenes.
Let me ask you this too, before we wrap. So, next episode is episode 5, so we're about to hit the midway point of the season.
Really?
I mean, we've only seen 4 episodes, so maybe it's too early to say. But do you feel like, because this was the first episode where we didn't really get a lot of progress, right?
So thank
maybe
God.
So maybe it's premature to ask this question. But
mm-hmm.
I don't, given that there are only 6 episodes left, do you feel like, come on, let's get this going? Like,
no.
I don't feel like we're behind, because it doesn't feel like it's one of those things that, like...
No, because we don't know how many clues there are. They can only be one more clue for all we know.
Right. Right.
So I feel okay about it right now. I mean, if past seasons are any indication, talk to us in four episodes, and then we'll feel like, what are they doing? Let's move it on.
Sure. I mean, because I'm thinking about how in past seasons, right? I know there's been more episodes, but at this point in that respective season, when there's only like a handful left, I know that I certainly felt like either can you do this with the remaining episodes, or you don't have enough episodes, or like you have too many episodes left. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you're stretching this out. Right now, I don't feel either way. I'm just kind of along for it. I'm not like sort of monitoring the time just yet.
Mm.
So I definitely want to see what this tech is.
Yeah, I do. And I think that the good thing is that there's no defined thing they need to overcome. For all we know, next episode, they could catch up with Moloch and find the tech. There's nothing saying they couldn't do that.
Right.
You know, it's not like I feel like they have so many things they need to take care of.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Now, they might just keep putting more clues and more clues, and it could drag on for another five episodes before they get it, but we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me think of when they, in the Red Angel season, when they had the seven signals, they were like, I remember they were going to different signals for a while, then they sort of stopped, and then they kind of gave up on it. And I didn't want that to be the case. Like if I was to say the clues are like the signals, I don't want them to like give us three and then suddenly that's it. Right.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, we don't know how many clues they set up.
They have two or three. So I think they have two right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's only three or four. Maybe it's 10. We don't know.
I think it's five. I believe it's five.
How did they know that?
Based on the thing that the thing that they 3D printed when they were putting it all together. I think there's three more they have to get.
Okay, so that's three more. That would leave three episodes.
Yeah, I think it's
give us that, please. Give us three episodes, and then they're there, and then we have three episodes of dealing with the tech and the fallout and all that. I doubt if we're gonna get it, but boy, I would love that. I figure about halfway through the last episode they'll find the tech.
If they haven't already, I just can't remember something. I want them to, like, maybe next episode, because they're going to be heading for the next clue in the next one. I've seen a scene from it, right? But I think remind us in the episode, like, how many do we have left? Like, give us sort of a status update on where we are. Like, do we have how many? Do we have two or three? Yeah.
I wouldn't hold your breath on that.
Next week, though, this is an episode I'm actually really looking forward to. Next week's episode is called Mirrors.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think, a little bit more of a time thing going on here, but they go into a wormhole.
And they go to the mirror universe?
It's so weird. They see, I forget who it is, they see a wormhole on screen, and Michael's like, somebody, I think it was Michael, who goes, "What's that?" And Stamets is like, "That is a wormhole." And I'm like, "Have you never seen a wormhole before?"
They were just in a wormhole. This episode, they were in a wormhole.
You came. I mean,
Michael Burley said it's a wormhole. It was Rainier said it's a wormhole, but still.
You know what? Maybe it's like it doesn't look like a traditional wormhole. Maybe it's because it looks different, but it's like you came through a wormhole to get to this century.
Yeah.
Right? It's probably the most common phenomenon. It's probably the most common phenomena that you've. It's probably on page one of your textbook.
Yeah, things to look out for.
Right.
Wormholes.
But next week's when they encounter the ISS Enterprise from Mirror Mirror. So I'm curious what
this will be interesting.
Gonna go on there.
This is the real tightrope. It's gonna be a real tightrope walk for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can really screw the
But they're using you can, they're using this, they're using the sets from Strange New Worlds for this one.
Okay.
Somebody was talking about it on Reddit today, and somebody made a really fun point or comment that I really liked. They were like, they said, how cool would it be if they, at the end of the episode, they take the Enterprise back to Starfleet HQ with them, and it upgrades it like they did with Discovery? And I said, you know what? That would be kind of a cool way to end the show, because as we've seen so far, there's no Enterprise in the 32nd century. So imagine if it took the ISS Enterprise and I don't know, just something to think about. But I doubt they'll do that.
Me too. But I wonder if we'll see Emperor Georgiou.
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's a good question. I'm not sure about that. I'm sure Kovic will have a lot to say about what's going on.
Oh, God.
I was glad we didn't see him this week.
Maybe they'll find Mirakovich, and he's just very forthcoming with the information. He tells everybody what's going on.
Mirakovich is actually the right Kovich, and Mirakovich yeah. is, yeah.
He's very
maybe,
open.
Maybe, but I'm really looking forward to it. I want to see what they do with this.
Yeah, this is wild, and they're going to do it within the timeline. You know, like, it's not a standalone, like some of them have been an Enterprise and things. So, yeah, this is quite the assignment for them.
Yeah. If only it could have, what I thought it was going to be, because you see it briefly in the seasonal trailer, I thought to myself, oh, maybe it's the Defiant, because they talked about the Defiant in the first season, we never saw it. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking back to what you said, like, oh, that's how Starfleet comes back. With all the design elements from the 60s, they find the mirror Defiant, the Defiant in the mirror universe. Like, oh, let's adopt this.
Yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah. But we shall see. So, yeah, we're going to pick up on that. They're going to be finding the next clue in that episode.
I'll be waiting with bated breath.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. I think that's going to do it for us this week. And we'll be back next week to discuss episode 5 of season 5, Mirrors. Can you pull a song from that one?
Mirror. It's got to be one. I'll think about it. I'll quote something.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you then.
Later.